All right, so picture this. You're on your deathbed and want to leave something special to someone, right? You hand them the key, you think, okay, it's theirs. But is it really, legally speaking? Like, is that enough?
It's a great question. And you know, this whole idea of what makes a gift legally valid is at the heart of this case, Newman v. Boast. It's a really famous one from 1898, went all the way up to the Supreme Court of North Carolina.
Okay, Newman v. Boast, 1898. So we've got the actual court opinions, some analyses of the case, even some modern perspectives to kind of see how this all plays out today.
Absolutely. It's fascinating how relevant it still is.
And by the end of this deep dive, we're going to figure out that line between a nice gesture and an actual legally binding gift.
Yeah, because you don't want to think you're giving a gift and then have it all go wrong in court, which, by the way, happens more often than you think, especially when you're dealing with wills and estates.
Definitely important stuff. So let's get into the story here. Who are these people, Newman and Boast, and what's the drama all about?
Okay, so we've got Julia Newman. She was a housekeeper who worked for this guy, Mr. Van Pelt, for like a decade, taking care of him,
A decade. Wow, that's a long time.
Right. So Van Pelt's on his deathbed and he makes this promise to Julia. He's like, look, everything in this house, it's yours.
Makes sense. I mean, she was there with him for so long. Sounds pretty straightforward, right?
Yeah, you'd think so, but it's not that simple. See, when Van Pelt dies, his estate administrator, this guy named Boast, he comes in and he's like, hold on, not so fast. He basically challenged Julia's claim to all this stuff.
Ah, so that's where the conflict comes in.
Yeah.
So what exactly were they fighting over? What were these supposed gifts?
Well, there were four main things. One was a life insurance policy that was tucked away in a bureau. Then, general household items. Also furniture, specifically in Julia's bedroom. Oh, and there was insurance money from a piano.
A piano. Okay, that's interesting. So even if he said it was hers, legally, that might not be enough, especially on his deathbed.
Exactly. That's where the law gets really picky. So this case boils down to the difference between two kinds of gifts. There are gifts causa mortis, which are given when someone thinks they're about to die, like a final act of generosity, you know?
Right, like in this case, Van Pelt probably thought he was at death's door.
Exactly. But then there's inter vivos gifts, which are just gifts given during everyday life. And courts use different rules to decide if each kind of gift is actually legit.
Makes sense. So Van Pelt, being on his deathbed, makes this a causa mortis situation. But he gave Julia the keys to his house, seemingly giving her everything inside. Why wasn't that enough?
Well, the court in North Carolina, they were really strict about this idea of delivery. You can't just say, hey, it's all yours. You got to actually hand stuff over, or at least show you're giving up control of it.
So just handing over keys wasn't enough in their eyes, even though she had the key to the house, the bureau, the whole place. It seems like having the keys gives you access to all those things.
Right, and that's where this idea of a repository of value comes in. The court basically said, look, a bureau, it's not specifically meant for holding important documents. You know, it's not like a safety deposit box.
Ah, okay. So giving her the key to the bureau wasn't the same as giving her the policy itself.
Precisely. It's like the key to the bureau doesn't automatically unlock ownership of everything inside, at least according to the court back then.
Interesting. So if he'd physically handed her the life insurance policy and said, "This is yours," that would have been different.
Most likely, yes. That direct action, actually handing it to her, would have been much stronger evidence of a valid gift.
Okay, that's the life insurance policy. What about all the other stuff, like the household items? Did she at least get to keep those since she had the keys?
Well, here's where things get a bit tricky. The court brought up this idea of constructive delivery. Basically, because Julia could use the keys to get into the house and access the stuff, they decided that was enough. Like the keys were a stand-in for actually handing each item over.
Okay, so some things in the house were valid gifts, but not everything. I'm starting to see how this case is kind of like a crash course in the nuances of gifting.
Yeah, it's really about the court drawing lines. They're saying, okay, this is what can be considered delivered with the keys, and this is what needs something more direct.
Gotcha. Now, what about the furniture in Julia's own bedroom? That seems different from the rest of the house.
Right, you're picking up on it. With the bedroom furniture, the court said that was an inter vivos gift, meaning Van Pelt had already given that to Julia while he was alive. She had control over her room and the furniture in it, so they were like, yep, that counts as a gift given during his lifetime.
Okay, so Julia wins that round, but we still have that piano insurance money to talk about. Why was that treated differently, even though Van Pelt supposedly called it Miss Julia's piano?
Yeah, the court wasn't swayed by just calling it hers, especially since Van Pelt kept control of the piano and actually collected the insurance money himself. So even though he said those words, it didn't actually transfer the ownership legally, even on his deathbed.
Interesting. So even a heartfelt declaration doesn't always cut it in the eyes of the law. Makes you think, doesn't it?
Definitely makes you think. And that's what makes this case so interesting, even today. It's like, how much does this 19th century case about a housekeeper and, her employer really apply to us now in the 21st century?
Right, like it seems like a totally different world.
Yeah, it does. But think about it. Like, how would this case apply to things like cryptocurrency or online accounts? What about a safety deposit box? It's all valuable stuff. How do you actually give that as a gift in a way that holds up legally?
I see what you mean. Like, let's say I have a cryptocurrency wallet and I want to give it to someone. Is it enough to just give them the password?
Exactly. That's the kind of question that Neumann v. Boast makes us think about. It's not just about what you want, it's about how you make it happen legally. Sharing a password, it might not be enough to actually transfer ownership of the wallet itself.
Wow, you're right. It really shows how important it is to be clear and to have things in writing, especially in this digital age, right?
Absolutely. It's not enough to just say, here you go, this is for you. You've got to take those steps to actually make the transfer happen.
Makes sense. Going back to the case, it seems like the court was super focused on making a clear distinction between what's a valid gift and what's not. Why were they so strict about it?
Well, don't forget, this was 1898. Back then, they didn't have all the legal tools and concepts we have today. By emphasizing actual delivery, the court was basically trying to create a system that was easy to follow. Like a way to avoid confusion and arguments down the road.
So they were going for a bright line rule, something clear cut, instead of being flexible.
You could say that, yeah. And it does make sense in a way, Even if it seems a little harsh sometimes, a bright line rule gives you more certainty and consistency, less room for headaches later on,
Right. But didn't that sometimes lead to results that seemed kind of unfair? I mean, Julia took care of Van Pelt, and he clearly wanted her to have those things. It seems like the court was more concerned with the letter of the law than the spirit of it.
Yeah, and some legal experts actually argue that the court was maybe a little too rigid in this case. They say that maybe they should consider the intent of the giver more, especially when there was a close relationship.
So it's like trying to balance sticking to the rules with being fair and understanding the situation, right?
Right. And that's where this idea of equity comes in. It's all about trying to be fair and just, like making sure the law doesn't create a result that's totally wrong, even if it's technically correct.
So do you think Julia could have argued that equity was on her side? She did serve him all those years, and he obviously meant for her to have those things.
Maybe, yeah. She could have argued that what Van Pelt wanted should be more important than the technicalities of how he did it. But remember, the court back then was operating in a very specific way. They really emphasized concrete actions and clear evidence.
Right. I guess if courts started bending the rules for everyone, it could create chaos, huh?
Yeah.
It's got to be tough to find that balance.
It is tough, and Neumann v. Boast shows that tension, trying to follow the rules and be fair at the same time.
This case has really given us a lot to think about. How something from over a century ago can still have so much to teach us.
That's the great thing about looking at legal history. It shows you how the law changes and grows, but also how some basic ideas stay the same over time.
So, if we were to sum this up for our listeners, what are the main things to remember from Neumann v. Boast?
Okay, well, first, remember the difference between those two types of gifts. One's given during life, and one's given when you think you're about to die.
Okay, those are the inter vivos and causa mortis gifts. Right, got it.
Right. Second big thing is to remember that actions speak louder than words. When it comes to gifts, you have to do something concrete to make that transfer happen.
Clear actions, clear evidence. Makes sense.
And then the third thing is that even old laws, like ones from over 100 years ago, can still matter today, especially in our modern world with all this new technology.
Great points. And speaking of the modern world, let's shift gears a bit. What if we put ourselves in Julian Nimmons' shoes? Like, what could Van Pelt have done to make sure she got what he intended?
It's a fun thought experiment, right? Like, we know the outcome, we know the legal pitfalls. But can we go back and help Van Pelt get it right?
Exactly. So Van Pelt wants to give Julia everything, make her the sole heir. What's the first thing that comes to mind?
Well, a will, right? Like, that's the simplest way to make your wishes crystal clear. No room for arguments.
Right, but remember, this is the 1890s. Maybe wills weren't as common back then. Plus, maybe he wanted to make these gifts right then and there, not wait for after he's gone.
True, true. Good point. So sticking with the gift route, we got to focus on those two things the court really emphasized, intent and delivery. How can we make those super obvious?
Well, actual delivery seemed really important to them. So instead of just giving Julia the keys, what if Van Pelt actually handed her the life insurance policy itself?
Exactly. Might seem like a small thing, but that would make a huge difference in court. It's undeniable proof that he meant to give it to her right then and there.
Okay, that solves the life insurance policy issue. But what about all the other stuff? Like the furniture, the household items. It's not like he could hand her every single thing while lying in bed.
Nope, not really practical. That's where a list comes in. Like, imagine Van Pelt writing down everything he wants Julia to have, super specific, signs it, dates it, hands it to her with the keys to the house.
Ah, okay, so it's like a treasure map leading her to everything. Plus having that written list, signed and dated, that's got to be strong evidence. Along with the keys to actually get to the stuff.
Absolutely. It removes all that doubt. The list shows his intent. The keys show her control. No more ambiguity.
It really emphasizes how important documentation is. A little piece of paper can prevent so much trouble down the road.
For sure. And it's a good lesson for today, too, not just back then. Having things written down, especially for gifts, can really help avoid family fights and make sure your wishes are followed.
Okay, so fast forward to today. What advice would you give people, especially with things like cryptocurrency and all those online accounts? How do we apply these lessons from Newman v. Boss to all that?
That's the million-dollar question. The idea of intent and delivery still matter, but it's way more complicated now. Things like cryptocurrency, digital music libraries, your online accounts. Just giving someone a password probably isn't enough.
So what can people do? Like, how do they make sure those digital things are actually gifted properly?
I think the key is to stay informed and plan ahead. The law is always trying to catch up with technology, right? So talking to a lawyer who specializes in estate planning and digital assets, that's a smart move. They can give you the best advice for your specific situation.
And having a will that specifically mentions digital assets is probably a must these days.
Oh, for sure. And just like with physical things, write down your intentions. Make it clear. There are even some platforms and services out there that are designed to help you manage and transfer digital stuff.
Wow, so much to think about. It's amazing how a case from over 100 years ago can still teach us so much about gifting. Like, the basic principles haven't really changed, but the world sure has.
It really has. It's a great reminder to think carefully about how we give things to people and how to protect our wishes, even after we're gone.
Well, that brings us to the end of our deep dive into Newman v. Boast. We covered a lot of ground today, from 19th century courtrooms to the wild world of digital assets.
It's been a fun journey. Hopefully our listeners are walking away with a better understanding of how to give gifts the right way.
Absolutely. And remember, whether you're giving someone a family heirloom or a Bitcoin fortune, being clear about your intentions and taking those extra steps can make all the difference. Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp.